it's KVC Arts Now on KVCR, arts and entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming, joined now by Ron Miltz, Philip Gabriel, and Mel Chadwick. Thank you for joining me, all of you. Thank you so much.
Excited to be here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Always a pleasure to be here, David. Thank you.
Thank you again. And we are here to talk a bit about the 100th season of the Riverside Community Players, and along with that, the play kicking off the 100th season on Golden Pond. But first, let's go into it with a bit about each of you in how you're associated with the play, with the theater, or maybe both. Mel, you're the only one who hasn't been here before on KVC Arts, so why don't we start with you, please?
All right, that's fine. I'm associated with the play as I'm playing Norman Thayer, Jr. I'm also associated with Riverside Community Players as a board member, and I've been a part of RCP since, 1996.
Is this the third run for On Golden Pond, or is this, it's been done three times and now this is the fourth?
This is the third one.
Philip Gabriel, let's hear from you as well, how you even became associated with the theater. I think you were going to hold off for a long time, and it lasted 2 to 4 days, maybe?
You have a good memory, David, yeah. I moved to Riverside, well, actually over New Year's Eve, one New Year's, and I said, well, I'm going to wait a while before I audition for anything, and I waited approximately 4 days and auditioned about January 3rd for a show called Mousetrap. I think this is about 15 years ago, maybe 12 years ago. But, you know, you have an organization that's turning 100 years old this year, and I still feel like the new kid on the block in a lot of ways. But I've been associated at Riverside for about 12, 15 years now, and on the board for about 6 years at this point. So.
Okay, Ron, how about you?
I've been a member, I believe, since 2013. My first show there, though, I did in 05. And this is, I believe we counted, my 9th show that I've directed for the company. It's just such a great space to work in, and it's a local theater, and I'm a big proponent of supporting your local theater. You know, it's one of those things where you're constantly working all over, and it's always nice to find something that's 2 miles from your house, you know? It makes the commute and the work a whole lot easier when I'm not driving an hour or flying somewhere to do something, so.
Oh, yeah. Theater geeks will drive forever. If it's a show that they've always wanted to do, they will make the drive, and so that is really handy to have it just a couple of miles from the house. Ron has also been on KVC Art in the past, although talking about Grace and Legba's Juke Joint, a couple of excellent graphic novels produced along with Chris Thayer. But Ron, you also had quite a history with the Riverside Community Players, and one thing that you didn't mention when we were talking about the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, this came up somehow. You were able to adapt Night of the Living Dead. Now, believe me, we're going to be talking about On Golden Pond in the 100th season, but this is just, it caught my attention. I know it will other folks out there. Night of the Living Dead, first of all, you were able to adapt it. Explain why you were even able to do this.
Yeah, so that came out of a production that I did in 2017. It was always a passion project for me. Romero zombies are like one of my favorite things I've ever done. But I've always felt like the stage play versions suffer from too many locations because you start off in a graveyard and then you're running outside. And there was this constant, every time I saw a production of Night of the Living Dead, it just felt too busy, and set changes to me ruined the flow. So I wanted to find a way to do an adaptation that could fit for legitimately a theater like Riverside Community Players. It's such a challenge because we are in the round there. You know, you can't fly something in. You're not in a situation where you're going to roll on a giant set, or if you are, it's going to create a really long changeover. And through like my work there and other smaller theaters, it was one of the things that I felt was missing from the horror genre was a single set horror show where you could have one set, you don't change it the whole show, and we could do a single location that an audience could still enjoy the story but told in a different way. That's how that was born. And then we were fortunate enough, they were planning the season, it fit in the slot. If I remember correctly, the other show you guys were trying to do, you couldn't get the rights for some reason.
That is correct.
Yeah.
And for the nebulous reason of they just said no.
Yeah, which happens a lot. The publishing houses will just be like, no, we have a regional production, or no, it's touring potentially next year, so you can't do it. So it's a thing that theaters deal with constantly that I don't think people realize. So they came to me, and I had been on the second slot, which I was fine with, and I offered to let them do the show royalty-free, which to me was important for the space because, once again, it's a local theater to me. I want to see this theater succeed as much as possible, and it's 2 miles down the road.
Well, and for me, what was exciting about that particular production is that we had a local playwright and a member that had done this great adaptation of Night of the Living Dead.
I appreciate that.
I mean, that's a no-brainer to me that we should have included that. If you are familiar with our seasons in the past, we've, since about 2017, been doing a show in October where we do a Halloween or a scary theme, starting with Dracula. We've done Dracula, Frankenstein, Haunting of Hill House, and that just seemed like a no-brainer that here we have this great adaptation of Ron Miltz's Night of the Living Dead.
Wow.
That would fit in, you know.
Oh, incredible.
And it was great. It was a great show.
Something about the single sets on this, if you could explain how it was done. I think a lot of people know the movie, or if they don't, quite simply, it's pretty much graveyard inside the house, some outside of the house, no biggie there, but there's a main faction divided between the main level of the house and the basement. So how did you bring all these things together? First of all, the graveyard. This is where it starts. Barbara, we're coming to get you.
Once again, it's the struggle of a single set. Yeah. So the original show, and most of the shows I direct for the space, they call for multiple locations, sometimes second stories, and it's difficult. We've had some directors and builders that were able to build second stories on. For me, it's one of those things where we figured out a way to use the upper spotlight bays to create a second story of the house. So we literally opened the show post the graveyard. Basically, it opens with the audience getting a jump scare as one of the actors runs in screaming. And there's a dead body sitting on the top level, and it was another actor. And she had been sitting there for a half an hour, not moving. The secret was she had ear pods, and she would listen to podcasts for a half an hour while the show was prepping. And then when she went out of audience view for like a beat, she'd pull the one earbud out, and, you know, as she was rambling along.
Excellent.
One of the most incredibly creative things, though, that you did, and I don't know if people realize this, that in the arena, above part of the section is an entirely different level that we normally use for storage. But we cleaned out the storage, we took the curtains down, we lit it, and then creatively Ron and his designer, Adam, created this literal two-story set out of the same area. It was incredibly creative.
Well, one of the things I wanted to do with that, I do a lot of lighting design as well professionally, so it's one of those things where I'm able to take that and apply it. Like, we were working on the current show with On Golden Pond. Every scene takes place in a different month at a different time of day. So there's a challenge to let the audience know, like, hey, this is a month later. Like, how do I make it feel warmer? How do I make it feel cooler? You know, and with Night, it was one of those things where we had the main storyline and then we did flashbacks. So part of the adaptation was every character got a flashback. So I took the graveyard scene and I turned it into our first flashback in the show. So it was something people would be familiar with. And then in the movie, there's this great monologue where our lead is talking about, like, how the zombies attacked him at the gas station. And I turned that into a flashback as well, where a wholly new character named Jackson is introduced. And he's sort of like the proto version of our hero for that one. Okay. It's really taking the ideas of how do I take a show that's not really designed for this space and how do I make it work in this space? And that's, for me, once again, it's one of the funds of working at Community Players, because you have moments and things that are really designed for a proscenium setup, and it's just not a proscenium setup. And you have to be inventive to produce theater in a space like we have.
That's a challenge. You said a challenge for the Romero thing, but really a challenge for, I'll just say, many shows, because I don't know if we may have alluded to it, but everything that you will see at Riverside Community Players, this is in the round, and this is conceptually far different than anything that anybody would be used to. Most people that see a live play, it's much like seeing a movie. It's basically a proscenium-type setting. You have this framed in, you, the audience, are the fourth wall, looking in at pretty much three other sides. But now, in the round, everybody's planted in the middle. The actors' butts are facing somebody all the time, all the time.
It's also very intimate. I mean, in some cases, I'm sitting there as Norman on the phone, and I'm just 12 inches away from the person in the front row.
Oh, gosh, that's
it's,
true.
It's very, very intimate. And I'm reading a paper in some parts of the play, and the person behind me could actually read the paper if he wanted to. It's that close, that intimate. And it can be daunting for a first-time actor on that stage, even for a veteran on that stage. But the audience is right there, just right there, is almost part of the play.
I've done so little in the round or maybe a three-quarter thrust type of thing, but with as many shows as I've done, there's such a small percentage has been that type of a thing. So I'm just wondering, can you ever really get used to it? It's hammered into you. Do not turn your back on the audience. It's one of the first thing, other than upstage, downstage, left and right, which those never stay with you anyway. But, you know, one of the things that's just hammered in is be aware of where the audience is, you know, so you can cheat three quarters or all this kind of thing. here, you just have to get used to it. Or maybe you never do.
You do.
You do.
Well, at least I have.
Okay.
But it takes a while.
You're at least one. I'm still.
It does take a while. I mean, but the first time on that stage, I walked on the stage and I said my line, and then I looked right in somebody's eyes. My brain locked, and I just couldn't think of my next line. So it can be daunting at first.
There's an energy, though, that happens when you work in the round.
That's true.
That really, it does not happen anywhere else.
That's true.
Not in proscenium three quarters. There's something that happens there. There's a connection with the audience that you do not get anywhere else.
I think it's because the round lacks the line of demarcation. So you don't have the apron that's cutting you off from the audience. So that idea of a fourth wall, it's not even like breaking the fourth wall, you're breaking the fishbowl. So with us, it's like watching a bunch of fish swimming around, literally in a round area, which creates problems for blocking because you have a lot of people that are like, hey, just lightly spin around, you know, go on this curvature that's not natural, but we're in a round area, so go the long way. We always say, go the long way, go the short way.
It sounded, Ron, for a second like you were going to go into the flat stage conspiracy theory and some of the circling the rounders.
I asked Neil Armstrong about that one time, and he got very upset. No. So.
Did he punch you?
Yeah.
Or was that another?
No,
was that you?
Okay.
Send him into orbit,
That's so cool. I had no idea. Wow. Going to On Golden Pond in just a few moments, but first we just have to hear about how the lineup for this 100th season for Riverside Community Players even came about.
Well, we polled our audience last year. We gave them little ballots to fill out, everyone who came to a show last year, and they all marked what they'd like to see.
The criteria was that it had to have been performed, I think, at least at one point during our 100-year history. I mean, that's not hard. The 100 years of history.
A lot of shows, a lot of repeats.
And clearly, our audiences had their favorites.
Yeah,
and their favorites out of, do we give them 20 options?
It was like five in each category.
Yeah, something like
50,
that.
Yeah, so 20, 25 options there. Yeah.
So each category, I heard somebody say, so you had to have what? A musical, some sort of so-called classic? And then, I mean, how did it go? What were the genres you were looking for?
Well, I believe it was comedy, drama, musical, and we always have kind of this off the beaten path category. And musicals are, we've just brought them back, actually.
Yeah, we stopped them for a while. Yeah.
Part of the reason we brought them back is because we were able to invest in technology and upgrade our technology to be able to do them more successfully. We'd reached a point where the equipment wasn't conducive to doing a musical in our intimate space.
Yeah, it was a really hard place to do a musical because you'd be singing in one direction and the people behind you couldn't hear you well. So it was a tough place for a musical, but now that we have new technology and mics, it's not the case anymore.
That's something I didn't think about in the round. You know, it's another thing that we learned to do is project. But I guess that really doesn't matter if you're only going in one direction, which I guess as human beings, that's what we do. Wow.
Well, and then the space itself has weird, like quirky little like moments in it. Like there's one spot where you go to and if you talk, it's completely dead. But if you're 4 feet from it towards the other door, it bounces off the wall and you can clearly hear yourself. You know, you're just in this weird round space where the sound doesn't bounce normally. So putting up the audio array is also difficult because you need to make sure that, you know, all your speakers are situated in such a way where it's not creating natural feedback.
Well, an interesting fact is that when they built it in 1953, they didn't really intend for it to be in the round.
That's true.
They just ran out of money,
is
what happened. So they weren't able to build the proscenium as they had intended. And it was the 50s. The round was the thing.
It was really coming on strong, the round.
It really was. Yeah. And so they said, well, this is an inexpensive way to be able to keep continuing our season. So they did it. And it just stayed, and we made it our own.
You know, I did not know that.
That is really cool. Really cool. I'm David Fleming in conversation with Philip Gabriel, board member at Riverside Community Players, Ron Miltz directing On Golden Pond, which is kicking off the 100th season, and Mel Chadwick, also on the board and playing Norman. Mel, you've seen the show here before, but is this one that you've done before?
No, I have never done this play before. I've seen it. I've seen the movie, of course, with Henry Fonda and Katharine Hepburn. But I did see the last production they did at RCP, and it was a good production, as I say. It was different, though, than what Ron has directed us to do. So it's going to be a little different.
And how long have you been acting?
I've been acting since 1994.
What got you to it?
A friend of mine named Lodi Zubko said, I think you'd like to do this. And so I said, well, I did it in high school, and so I'll give it a try. What the hell?
Okay.
And I got bit, as they say, and I've been doing it ever since.
It happened so many different ways. I grew up doing it, and I forget exactly how. Oh, yeah, I do. I was influenced by a cousin. And then my parents came home one day and caught me doing theater.
I learned it from you.
But then many people, they come out and they audition for a show. Mm-hmm. Their only experience, they think it's nothing, but they've been maybe a grade school or middle school teacher for 25 years, and that has prepared them greatly. So it's just always cool to hear about how people caught the bug and what kept them there. Ron, you are directing on Golden Pond. Let's just talk about the plot line, please.
Well, so you have this show that was written in 79, so we've always assumed that it roughly takes place in the year it was written. The reality is, Mel put this in my head the other night, was you have this man that was born in the last year of the 19th century, and here he is as we approach the end of the 20th century, and he's about to celebrate his 80th birthday. He is also beginning to suffer from dementia. As the play goes on, each scene takes place in a different month of Norman's life as he is going towards sort of the end of his life. So we start at the beginning of the summer. There's five scenes in the show, three in the first act, two in the second act. The show runs from May till September. It ends up being this really lovely piece between a husband and a wife and their estranged daughter, who shows back up to visit with a new husband and a child. That is not hers, a stepchild. And Norman is suddenly reinvigorated and has found, I wouldn't say a reason to live, but he's definitely found the fountain of youth, as it were.
Yeah.
So it's this really beautiful character piece. But it also deals with a lot of the problems we see with some of our older relatives. You see, he's gotten more ornery as he's gotten older, and his filter is starting to go away. He ends up saying and doing a lot of things that aren't exactly likable, but there is definitely a part of him that wasn't that prior to this. So it's him dealing with this memory loss and the frustration that comes with it, ultimately. And it's not a super long show, which is one of the things I love. It's about an hour and 40 minutes, and it runs nice and tight. Ernest Thompson, when he wrote this show, he wrote something that's very moving, if not very simple. And the film version becomes much more about Jane Fonda than the stage version is. The daughter, Chelsea, she's much more up in the front of the film version. But in our stage version, it's definitely about Norman and Ethel, their relationship, and then their relationship with Chelsea.
And Ethel is very important in this mix because she's Norman's buffer, and she's very pleasant. And it's played by Sandra Ford, by the way. She's very good in this role.
And Mel and Sandra have such fantastic chemistry that you would believe 100% that these people have been married for 48 years, which is in the show, you're like, oh, I get this relationship with the two of them. So as much as he's crotchety, we still have worked in. It's like, Mel, you need to flirt with her more. There needs to be a reason she likes you, you know? So they have this really fun relationship. And Sandra, the way that she's brought the character forth, she's so kind and patient and loving. And then when she finally like lets that shield down, you see the pain that she's going through while Norman's dealing with all this. And like one of my favorite lines in the show is, they make a decision and she looks over to him and she goes, you know, I'm married to the kindest man in the world and I'm the only one that knows. And it's one of my favorite lines. And it's just right there where you're like, yeah, you kind of are the only one that knows.
Right.
Like, wow.
Yeah.
Was this ever a book before it became a play and then the movie?
No, I believe when he wrote it, Thompson just wrote it as a play.
As a play.
Okay. Yeah. It just feels like the kind of thing. I mean, there are certain books that are like, Something Wicked This Way Comes strikes me. The first time I read it way back when, I related to the children. And then as I read it again as an adult, I related to the father. And so it was really interesting. I would imagine on Golden Pond, so many people, unfortunately, have gone through living with someone or very, very close to someone in some form of dementia or Alzheimer's. So I would imagine this is something that really strikes people in different ways and strikes everybody. I can relate to this person. I can relate to him or her.
Well, as far as that goes, 100%. I mean, part of the discussion when we were doing our table work early on, first off, I did not realize Mel was 80. So I've known Mel since 1999. Mel was in the second show I ever did. Uh-oh. So when I was in college, I got drug out of a theater appreciation class to audition for a show by David Crane, who was at Performance Riverside at RCC. I was like, cool, that's great. I just want the extra credit. And then the second show I ever did was Moon Over Buffalo, and Mel and I were in that show together. And
that's right.
What's really fun about that is I haven't done a show with Mel since then, although our paths have crossed many times. This is our first time working together in 25 years. So, but getting back to that, my father and my mother-in-law, My dad just turned 82 and had like a massive stroke about a year and a half ago. And my mother-in-law is dealing with the early stages of dementia as well. So the two of them, I've watched them very quickly get, like, they've retired and they've moved out to Missouri. But they're getting older, you know, and in that way where we're much closer to the end than the beginning. And when this show came across the season of the potentials, what could you direct? It's like the thing I jumped on because it spoke to me. I'm living this. I am Chelsea right now, living this moment. How can I, as an artist, approach this in such a way where, one, it'll help me understand what my parents are going through a little more, but also how do I deal with it and how would she deal with it? And so it allows me to have some insight with the audience. And as Mel said, the way we're doing the show, I mean, it's still the play. We haven't changed lines or anything, but I definitely have an interpretation.
Right.
And this interpretation is definitely based upon my personal experiences that I'm going through right now. Yeah. So,
wow. Mel, one of the things that I really love about community theater versus, let's say educational or, at whatever level we may be talking about is in the world of community theater, we can actually have children cast as children and... Oh, I'm not trying to paint a picture here, not making a joke about it either, but with you able to play Norman instead of some teenager trying to put on makeup and whatever. So this is really wonderful, but I'm not here to talk about your age. Ron already did that.
Yes. thank you, Ron, for that.
I didn't know. I'm a bus driver as well on my weekends.
It really doesn't matter. I've told everybody I know how old I am.
So. Octa outed.
Some people I don't know.
To bring in Norman... I guess I'm trying to avoid going into heavy Stanislavskian kind of theory or something like that, but what are you bringing in? Do you have memories of maybe your own parents or grandparents, people that you know, to bring Norman to life?
Yeah, I do have people who have been in my life, or actually one is still in my life. He's still alive. Mm. My sister's husband, my brother-in-law, he is kind of Norman personified. It's eerie how much they're alike. And so I'm drawing on him a little bit throughout my Norman portrayal because he is so Norman. And luckily he lives in Northern California and won't hear this, but there are a couple of other people I've known in my life who I'm drawing on who have had dementia or just outright Alzheimer's, and so those acquaintances have come in handy with this portrayal for me. And Ron, of course, is helping a lot with getting me out of my, this is what I think it should be, calm, demure Norman. He's a little more volatile than that.
And I think... I don't want to get too much into my personal, but one of the things that I've watched, because this is not my first relative that I've watched go through dementia, was the anger. And it's one of those things where I can only imagine it comes from a point of frustration where you are a normal person and you have moments that for whatever reason, you just can't remember. You just don't know what's going on. And you got to constantly be reminded. And then at a certain point, people start treating you like you're a child, even though you're not. And I know that frustration exists. And as we were going through it with Mel and the script, I'm like, there's a lot of repetition in here, Mel, and I think it's intentional. I think the author put this in here because it's designed to be, she is the calming influence on him. And she's always offering him a snack. And I can only imagine maybe it's because like food makes you happy and it recenters you. And it's like that idea of constantly being reminded of your reality becomes difficult at a certain point because without those touchstones, what happens to you?
On Golden Pond opens September 6th, runs through September 22nd. Some of these, though, are evening performances. Some are matinees.
Correct. So we have Friday, Saturday evening performances, Sunday matinees, and our final Saturday we have, it's always fun for the actors, a doubleheader. We have a Saturday matinee and a Saturday evening.
Oh, wow.
That's a long day.
It's a long day for those guys.
Wow, yeah, it is. And now the rest of this 100th season, every single one of these is such a heavy hitter. So let's just go through the season, if starting off with On Golden Pond, running through September 22nd, opening September 6th.
Right, and you're not going to want to miss that. I have to tell you, the cast is amazing. After that, for our Halloween show, we have Wait Until Dark, directed by Patricia Scarborough. It will be actually auditioning fairly soon, first week of September. Watch our social media for that and get a chance to participate in our 100th season there. Fantastic show. We're followed by the Christmas show, which is our annual A Christmas Carol. People make that part of their Christmas traditions for the last, 15, 20 years or so. If you meet somebody on the street and you say that you're associated with Riverside Community Players, invariably they will say, oh yes, I go to Christmas Carol every single year. Mm-hmm. That seems to be the show that we're known for.
And the seats fill up?
They do. They do. In fact, this year we are also expanding it to two weekends as opposed to one. So it's part of your Christmas tradition. Our January show is, talk about a heavy hitter. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh my gosh, wow.
Very excited about that one. We will have another family show after that. I believe it is Charlotte's Web.
That's right.
And following that is something that we haven't done a lot of, but we are bringing it to this season based on public request, A Midsummer Night's Dream by that that English guy.
That guy.
That English guy, yeah.
Cool. Marlowe, right?
Yeah, Marlowe.
There's a man who's been to college.
And the last time it was done at RCP was like 1995 or 6.
And you were in it.
I was in that show. Yeah. Yes, I
was. As was the director, Mike Eastman.
That's right.
He played one of the fairies.
Yep,
as an 17, 18-year-old high school student that show.
There's been enough time on this one where, maybe the person who was young enough to have played Puck or whatever coming in at that point way back when, and now they're old enough to play Oberon. I pulled that one out. Gosh.
You know that English guy. And we're ending our season with the fantastic Man of La Mancha. Like I said, we took a break from musicals, and we brought back our musical with Putnam County Spelling Bee. But boy, we're really going to ramp up the costumes and music with Man of La Mancha. So we're looking forward to that.
Well, don't forget, you did the 2 years in a row now. You've done the summer conservatory with the kids.
We have.
And that's been a big step with musicals as well.
Been a huge step with musicals. Our leader of that is A.J. Marquez, and he's a phenomenal director. He wrangles these young performers into doing some amazing things. This last year, it was kind of a coup to get the teen version of Hadestown, which they did, and they did one sold-out weekend. I don't think they had a performance that was not sold out.
It was really well done,
Oh, and I love it as an opportunity because it's an open audition, so it goes along with that community spirit, and it allows high school kids something to do. It happens so quick; it's like 2 week turnaround. So
it's a little bit longer than that, maybe, but it's a very quick turnaround. Yeah. And young people spend their days at the theater, and then it culminates in the performance over a weekend.
Find out much more, including the upcoming production of On Golden Pond at RiversideCommunityPlayers.com, also on Facebook and Instagram. Thanks again to Philip Gabriel, Mel Chadwick, and Ron Miltz, speaking mainly about On Golden Pond opening up the 100th season at Riverside Community Players. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Here at KVCR, thanks to Rick Dulock, Sandy Hodela, and Shireen Awad. Many past KVC Arts can be found through iTunes, NPR One, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, and most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts, behind us now, for example, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. Be sure to check out our calendar of events in the region at our homepage, kvcrnews.org, or you can go directly there at kvcrnews.org/calendar. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support, which you can do any time of the year. Go to kvcrnews.org/support. And thanks again.